Let's bring in our friend Emily Kaplan from ESPN's NHL coverage into the conversation. Emily, always a pleasure getting you on the Playbook with Sat and John on Wednesday. And you know what, Emily? I love the piece you had out. They got a lot of run last week about how NHL players, they got big butts, they can't lie about it, and they have a hard time finding jeans, Emily.
Yeah, so two aspects of it which I found interesting. One, I'm always bugging hockey players about weird and annoying questions, and usually you can tell if they're into a topic or not. And when I asked this to players, and the way I phrased it was simply, hockey players are notorious for having thick lower halves. Have you ever had problems buying pants? I believe it was like 90% of the players that I asked were like, their eyes lit up, and they're like, yes, I do, and wanted to talk about it. So it probably affected anyone. And the reason I think it was so popular was, you know, it's an issue that affects everyone. It's really relatable. It wasn't just hockey players that reached out, but a lot of other athletes, a lot of other regular human beings, a lot of women. Just get anxiety in the dressing room. It's a tough place to be. So it was nice hearing NHL players, you know, show their human side and say, hey, us too.
Yeah, no question about that. And another article that came out that I know Wyshynski worked on as well and you've been working on is looking at the trade values of the teams that are in the hunt here. And we're kind of talking about the Canucks, and tonight they're taking on the Edmonton Oilers, and Alex Edler's name keeps coming up because, you know, do you move him? Because long-term, you can get a first-round pick and a good prospect, or do you keep him and try to be a playoff team next season as well? And if you're a team like Vancouver, and like, how do you navigate the short-term versus the long-term?
Yeah, you know, it's a really interesting debate because no one expected the Canucks to be in this position right now. And I'm sure the plan all along was to move him or, you know, use him as an asset. And then when you're here and you're just on the cusp of a playoff berth, you're like, we've got all these young players. Like, what message does it send them? Like, we want to set the culture here that this is the group we can win with. Like, we should probably not go all in right now, but show them we're committed to it. So if I'm the Canucks management, and this is hinted at in the piece, I say that you keep them. You try to go for it this year, even though you probably don't have a great chance, but just because of the tone that sets to guys like Besser and Pettersson and so forth. But I also, you know, there's a long plan that Jim Benning has, and it probably involves getting more draft picks, so I wouldn't totally be averse to trading them.
Emily, when you look at the trade market and maybe a team is out there looking for some physicality, some toughness, some grit in their forward ranks, how much does it hurt Philadelphia that a guy like Michael Ferland in Carolina, who is a lot younger, currently cheaper, has more points than Simmons, is also perhaps available from the Hurricanes?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, when I look at the guys that are most likely to move, like, Wayne Simmons fits everybody's what they wanted a guy in the playoff run, right? Like, he can score, he's got experience, he had a big body, but like you mentioned, he's got a nearly $4 million cap hit. Michael Ferland's a lot cheaper and a lot younger. And, you know, sometimes when you get a trade deadline acquisition, it's someone that you want to test out in your system and maybe re-sign. And he's probably going to be a lot cheaper than Wayne Simmons is in the free agent market. So it does probably hurt his trade value a bit. I still think that both players are likely to be moved for very different reasons. I mean, it comes down to cost, of course, but I wouldn't be shocked to see both guys wearing different sweaters.
When we talk about Michael Ferland, reports did come out a few weeks ago in Carolina that he's asking for Tom Wilson-like money, so maybe upwards of just over $5 million per on a pretty long-term deal for him. Do you see that being also what he's asking and expecting out of free agency should he get there?
It's a good question. I think sometimes when you take a risk with a new team, you don't get that, you know, as big of a raise, to be honest with you. I mean, Tom Wilson would not have garnered that from anybody else but the Washington Capitals. Now, it's just tricky because of the team that he's on. It's the Carolina Hurricanes, and maybe he's just highballing them because he knows he's not going to get it, and he knows he's probably not going to get anything he wants with them. He has to go to their free agent market. So, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he's like a $5 million player in free agency, but above that kind of seems crazy to me, but I don't know what spending's going to be like this summer.
Now, another team that's been pretty active trade-wise has been the Chicago Blackhawks so far, and there's some buzz that they may be looking to do a lot more. And we've seen some moves already. How far can this sell-off go with the Blackhawks, you think, Emily?
Well, it can't go that far because I still don't believe they're going to move any of the, you know, veteran guys that have no movement clauses. That's Patrick Kane, who, by the way, is like having a ridiculous season.
Yeah.
It's obviously overshadowed by their record. Taze isn't going anywhere, I don't think. Keith and Seabrook are very unlikely. Keith is the only one that could possibly move. When they made that Jan Ruda and Slater Cuckoo trade, it was really interesting to me because it seemed like Stan all of a sudden like is getting some cap space, and it almost foreshadowed a bigger move to come. He's really done some great work lately of getting rid of his biggest mistakes. Jan Ruda was given probably too big of a contract for what he was last year, and so was Brandon Manning. So I don't think he's done, but I don't think anything crazy seismic is going to happen. And I couch all of this by saying I have no idea what Stan Bowman's going to do.
It's always hard guessing what Stan Bowman's going to do. I'm with you in terms of Kane, Taves, even Duncan Keith, and Seabrook's deal is going to be hard to move regardless because of how much money and terms left on it. But the two guys I've been kind of keeping an eye on here, people are interested in, depending on here and there, Brandon Saad and Artem Anisimov. They have more term on their contract. So guys like that, is it easier to move them in the offseason maybe, considering they do have a couple years left beyond this season?
Sure. I'm all about the June trades. I think that's when you can get the biggest bounty. Anisimov, I'm glad he brought up because I do think that's a player that would generate a lot of interest. He's a center that, you know, he maybe in the last couple months has not fallen out of favor with the Blackhawks, but hasn't really been able to find a role. He really thrives when he plays with Kane, but hasn't grown great otherwise. But he's still a very strong player, and he's pretty reasonable for what, you know, he can offer when it comes to his contract. So I think that might be the most likely guy to go. And Saad, there's something about him, even though Stan Bowman is correcting his mistakes. It almost feels like Gary Bettman with Arizona, like that's his baby and he doesn't want to admit he's wrong on it. And so it's hard for me to imagine him trading him once again.
Talking with Emily Kaplan from ESPN's NHL coverage on Sportsnet 650. And Emily, you know, about a month ago, we had heard that St. Louis Blues are having essentially like a garage sale, all their top players available, come and send in your trade proposals. But they've been playing better lately. They're 4 points out of a wild card spot. Is that still the belief in St. Louis that they're still very much willing to engage in trade discussions, or has their position in the standings and the mediocrity of the Western Conference has changed what might be happening there?
The way I see it playing out is I think they kind of wait 2 weeks. You know, like they're not going to make any stance right now. Like today is the day we decide we're sellers or buyers. They're not going to be buyers, but so forth. I think they're going to see like, hey, can we ride this wave? Like, for all the way up to a couple points out of playoff position, like maybe this is going to be a miraculous turnaround. I tend to still think that's unlikely. Like the first half of their season was just such a hot pile of garbage. And, you know, even if, you know, the shooting percentage is kind of regressed to the mean, like it has with Vladimir Tarasenko, it feels like a really big hill to climb, especially, you know, with that goaltending. So I think, you know, wait 2 weeks, see where we're at. Likely, I still think that they want to shake up the chemistry and there's players that aren't the Vladimir Tarasenko's and Alex Petrangelo's that really could still do that. And, like, Braden Schenn is a guy that I think it just feels like he would generate a lot of interest, and the St. Louis Blues maybe aren't as tethered to him.
Well, funny about that, because now earlier this week we had heard the Edmonton Oilers are aggressively all in. Maybe they're offering their first-round pick, a few others, for scoring help. And after you roll your eyes a dozen times, what do you think the Edmonton Oilers can do and which teams they would try and pry a player out of?
Well, if I'm another GM in the league, I'm calling Peter Chiarelli and giving him my most ridiculous trade proposals and hope he bites, because he just kind of seems like a man that's making some last-ditch attempts. Like, a move that makes a lot of sense to me, it's not as sexy, but, like, Patrick Maroon is struggling in St. Louis. He's clearly going to go. He's on a one-way deal. You know, it's the ideal trade deadline candidate. It's probably cheap. Like, the last time we saw Maroon really thrive was in the playoffs with Connor McDavid. Like, why don't you just try to recreate that? So that might make a lot of sense. And maybe if they're doing a deal with Blues anyway, like throw in Braden Schenn and obviously get a ton in return if you're the Blues. So something like that might make sense. Honestly, every forward you hear of that's available, I wouldn't count out of being traded to the Edmonton Oilers.
Now, you know, when it comes to Edmonton too, Emily, like, I know they're trying to make the postseason. And I know that if they make the playoffs, everybody might keep their jobs, even though that doesn't guarantee anything. But at what point, if you're Edmonton, do you just say, we have to change our entire front office? Like, you need to move everybody out, bring a completely new, fresh look into this. And I know they want to make the postseason this year, but isn't it almost more prudent to clean house in a front office, hold on to your assets, and be a seller, if anything, and then try to reload instead of essentially blowing whatever you have left on a fruitless playoff run?
Well, that's conventional wisdom, my friend. Of course. Made that decision yesterday.
Right.
I'm with you. I think that's the direction this franchise is kind of beyond repair at this point. But when you look at what's going on, I mean, it's clear that they're going to wait it out at least the season to decide on Chiarelli. And that means that he could who knows what to this roster that could do whatever effect for the next couple of years.
You know, it kind of does remind me. I know the situation is different because when Bill Wirtz was running the Blackhawks, there were so many issues going on. But it was very obvious that team was never going to take a step forward or change what they're about until ownership changed, until everything in the front office completely turned over and you brought in a new group. And I'm not saying you have to get rid of Darryl Cates as the owner, but I mean, I know Kevin Lowe isn't the guy anymore, but you can't tell me he doesn't have influence when he's there with the owner every day, right? Like, when that culture doesn't change, how can you have any hope of moving forward? And when you look at Chicago, I mean, you know as well as anybody, when once Bill Wirtz, you know, and nobody's happy about anybody passing away, but once he moved out of the picture and the culture changed, that's when they finally move forward.
It's so true. And I mean, for them, and it's a little bit different because they were just such a low-budget team. The Blackhawks, they were really skimping on so many things, and Rocky took over his dad's operation. He's like, we're not running like this anymore. Like, we're an original six franchise. Like, we're going to spend on athletic tape for our players so they don't have to, like, count the amount of athletic tapes that they're bringing everywhere. So that's, like, the biggest difference there. But I think you're right. I mean, it was a new GM, a new team president, a new way of spending and evaluating players, and all of a sudden they win three Stanley Cups. And it wasn't all of a sudden, you know. It was a little bit of a slow build, but you really do need a total reset sometimes when you're that near it in the bottom. And it really does feel like the Oilers, even though they had made the playoffs recently, just are kind of near it in the bottom.
Yeah, no doubt. We're speaking to Emily Kaplan from ESPN's NHL coverage here on Sportsnet 650. What about the Blues? Are they all of a sudden in the playoff race and they're not going to sell off anymore? Like, what would you do if you're the Blues all of a sudden sitting at 500, only a couple points out of a playoff spot?
Yeah, I think I wait 2 weeks and see if we're still there and see if we're still trending in that direction. But if you are, I think you make the obvious trades. Like, that's the Patrick Maroon who has an expiring contract and things like that. But I don't think you do the super drastic things like we heard alluded at, which is, you know, put up Parayko or Pietrangelo or Vladimir Tarasenko on the market.
Emily, I think it's a surprise to at least some people, including myself, the Calgary Flames playing as well as they have, and they're a team that looks pretty solid top to bottom. The biggest question for me is the play of David Rittich and how he just kind of came out of nowhere this season based on Mike Smith and his injury. He really stepped in, and he's playing like a number one goaltender. Do you believe the Calgary Flames have that confidence in David Rittich, or are they maybe discreetly still looking for a veteran goaltender to maybe just insulate what they've got in Smith and Rittich right now?
You know what? Like, Brad Cherry-Livick has made some really smart moves this year, and he doesn't seem like a guy that panics. And I think that, you know, the Rittich story was good at first, and it was happy, and you're like, this is going to sustain itself. But since it's proved it can sustain itself, I'm not sure they're going to go out and get goaltending help, especially because goaltending help is probably going to be really expensive. Like, I could see them just going all in and saying, we're a high-power offense. Like, we're going to go get another forward, and we're going to ride out Rittich. And we know that we do have Mike Smith, who is a veteran, and he has struggled lately. But, like, we have another guy we can turn to that has experience. So that's more of the route I see them going.
Sportsnet 650.